Hello, and welcome to Small Talk, a podcast from Contemporary Pediatrics. I'm Randa Hester, and in this episode, Helen Wang, an assistant clinical professor at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine, facilitates a discussion about adolescent patients and having the talk with her colleagues, Kanani Tichin, an assistant clinical professor of adolescent and young adult medicine, also at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine, and Samantha Hill, an adolescent medicine clinician at the University of Alabama at Birmingham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Helen Wang, and I'm one of the general pediatricians at UCSD and a medical educator. And we have two speakers here, and I'm going to let them each introduce themselves. We'll have Dr. Tichin go first.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kanani Tichin. I am an assistant professor at UCSD also, and a subspecialist in adolescent and young adult medicine at Rady Children's Hospital, and also an educator, medical educator.
Hi, everyone. My name is Samantha Hill. I am also an assistant professor. I'm at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and I also work at Children's of Alabama, and I'm actually a clinician scientist.
Thank you. Thanks for the introductions, everyone. So the topic today we're talking about is how to talk to teens about sex. So why do you, as a pediatrician, I know I have to ask about it. It's part of my HEDS exam. But why do you guys think it's important to talk about it? And either one of you guys can go.
I can start out. My question, I guess I would answer the question back is why make the assumption that it's not important? And who else is talking to teens about sex in our society? So are the parents talking to their son or daughter or their child about sex? Are they thinking to ask questions about gender, about the spectrum of gender? Is the child being introduced to concepts like that? I guess it largely depends on the age of the child, but what I would say is that many parents probably don't feel entirely comfortable broaching the topic of sex and gender with their child. I think it's difficult sometimes as a parent to acknowledge the fact that your child is now blossoming into a young adult. And along with that comes territory that can be really uncomfortable for parents. So my question would be, why not?
And to add to that, I think about the missed opportunities when we don't talk about sex with our children. It's a perfect opportunity to actually start the conversation about what healthy relationships look like. So whether that's safe touch, as far as making sure that you only are touched when you want to be touched. So whether that's holding hands or unfortunately some of the more scarier things that result in abuse, but it's also a way to actually help our young people start to figure out who they are and set those healthy boundaries so that when they do get into relationships that might actually be engaged in having sex, that those relationships are healthy, that they know who to go to, and that they recognize that their parents or their doctor, whoever it is actually open to having these discussions and answering questions.
So then, a question for you both is, when I have many things to cover in just a 30-minute visit, like how does one go about this? It sounds like it is important, and why don't we talk about it? I think time is an issue, at least definitely for some general pediatricians. Comfort is a huge thing too. But how is the general pediatrician supposed to do it?
I'll start. And I didn't preface, I'm also an adolescent medicine subspecialist. And so for me, what I do is I actually start off with a simple question is with the young person as far as what they want to be in life. And once they tell me whether they know or they don't, then I actually link it back to their different relationships. So are you interested in someone? And this is all age appropriate. Are you dating someone? Are you having sex with someone? And we talk about, what those relationships look like and how they fit within the context of their future goals, whether that's to be the captain of a sports team next year, to go to college, to go to the military. We start there. And I find that by starting with something as easy as your future goals and just are you having a relationship, do you find someone cute or attractive, that actually allows the teens to actually answer and ask a host of questions that oftentimes they haven't had an opportunity to do so before. And it's very quick because they tell you exactly what is on the top of their mind and you can slide in some information that you think is important for them as well.
That's so well said, Sam. I would add to that when pediatricians see children, we have an opportunity and you have an opportunity, Dr. Wang, to form a bond with those children. So you're right. If you're just reading off of a list and asking questions, and this is the first time you're seeing a patient, it's unlikely that patient is going to feel comfortable coming forward with some of their most private thoughts and urges, and may even feel uncomfortable talking to you about some of the bodily responses they're having at a young age. But as a pediatrician seeing young kids, you have the opportunity to start having conversations with kids and sort of ease into it, you know, when a kid is prepubescent or entering puberty, in establishing that relationship of trust with their pediatrician, maybe just starting with a mildly confidential conversation. And like Dr. Hill was saying, just really starting in with some easy topics about school and friends and nothing that's too heavy, but then gradually moving into more serious or sensitive territory. And I think, you know, oftentimes what I've found, and I'm sure Dr. Hill has found, and you've probably found, Dr. Wang, is that many times these young people have questions of their own about what's happening to their bodies and feelings that they're having, and they just are looking for somebody that they trust, an adult that they trust, that they can actually ask questions to. So I think the more open we are, and definitely a non-judgmental approach, being open to really any question and providing some evidence-based answers for these kids, and even resources where they can look up information on their own rather than going to, say, a search engine of any kind, maybe giving them some good websites where they can do their own directed learning is a great idea for them and helps them feel empowered.
So what do you do? I mean, it sounds like, you know, you do this. I hope I do it too with my patients, but, you know, how do you do it when like the teens just look at you like, what? You know, like, how do you get over that discomfort of like, they just, why are you asking me this?
I think that's probably stylistic. So I wouldn't be surprised if here, Dr. Hill and I vary, and it probably depends on the patient. For me, I tend to call teens out on their staring or their sometimes their indifference, and just sort of acknowledge it, but kind of in a playful way. I think one of the things that I've learned is that teens can really read you. They're very good at reading people, and they know when you're not being authentic. So if they're being their authentic selves and not particularly in a good mood, I will be my authentic self and just acknowledge that it doesn't, you know, this is what I'm observing. And do you want to talk? Do you not want to talk? But really give them, again, the option of trusting me, of asking me questions, or asking me why I'm asking a question. And then it's my job to really be open with them. But for me, it just depends on the patient. I don't know, Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Chichen, actually. It's patient specific. And I'll say I've had patients where, you know, the silence is actually because they really have no trust in anybody in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And so I approach those young people differently than the average teen. In those situations, I actually allow the silence and just, you know, let them know that we'll discuss this at the next visit, because I know they're going to have another visit with me. But for the average teen, again, I don't differ that much from Dr. Chichen. I actually, just as the teens are reading me, I am reading them. And mm-hmm. oftentimes I can tell what actually made them quiet. And I might, in a nice, joking, playful way, bring up the particular part of my question that changed their reaction during the discussion. And I actually find that actually gets them engaged, because they weren't expecting me to pay attention, let alone be listening, let alone ask them something about how they responded and reacted to my question.
I think also how we respond. So that brought to mind for me a patient who was on her cell phone most of the visit, and I was asking questions about why she was presenting to healthcare and some other things. And she finally looked up from her cell phone and she said, "Why you gotta ask me so many questions?" And, you know, I think it would be easy for us to take offense at that and to sort of be taken aback and not know what to say. But I just sort of met her with, "Oh, what a great question. Yeah, that's valid. Like, here's why I'm asking all of these really invasive personal questions. I want to be a better doctor to you. I need to know what's going on in your life so that I can do that." So again, even some of the challenging questions that teens ask, that gives us an opportunity to explain our role in their lives and also what we're hoping to accomplish for them during the visit. but also maybe getting them to think about, what do you want from your doctor during this visit, and how can I meet that need?
And can I add something to that, Dr. Wang? I find that when you take the approach that Dr. Chichen just mentioned, as far as with patients that are a lot more apprehensive than the average teen, what you see over time is actually they become empowered, and it actually makes your job, especially if you're a general pediatrician, much easier, because they come in and they're already ready and prepped with their questions about sex for you. And so you can not only address their questions, but fill in the gaps. And maybe even it's easier to cover some things that you haven't been able to cover in the past, because their knowledge and self-efficacy and empowerment regarding this topic has increased dramatically.
Right. And so, and then, you know, kind of going back, Dr. Hill, you mentioned briefly that, you know, for the ones who are a little, you know, they're quiet and more reserved, and you bring them back. Like, how do you bring them back without the parent, right? Because, I mean, that's always the question. The parent's like, why do they need to come back? And sometimes, like, personally, I'm like, I have one reason and two, you know, but I'm not going to tell you the other one. But, you know, how do you guys bring people back? And how do you get parents sort of, you know, like, not too much in their business and navigate all the parental stuff as well?
I'm happy to start. I have a variety of parents, but for the parents that are on the far end that are very worried, concerned, annoyed that we're talking about these conversations in private from them, or in an isolation from them, and that it's confidential. For those parents, actually what I do is I actually start with the young person and I ask them what, if anything, they'd be comfortable with me disclosing with the parent. So that's an easy question that I actually ask. Sometimes the youth will surprise you and they will say, you know, you can tell them all of it. Other times they'll say, you can talk about this topic, but I want you to frame it within this window. And all of that's fair game. And so I find that when I know a parent is particularly not in favor of this one-on-one time, that we highly encourage based on several organizations that deal with youth. When I find that they're not in favor of that, I actually go ahead and ask the youth that up front, because I can already sense that from the parent. And that way I'm giving the parent a little bit, but I've gotten permission from the youth to do so. When it comes to bringing them back, I too, Dr. Wang, will usually have a couple of additional reasons to bring them back. And then, you know, also address the topic of sex and pick up where we left off.
Yeah, I would also back it up a step. So even before I meet with teenagers on their own, before I have the parent leave the room, I will say to the parent and the teenager, okay, here's how long we're going to spend together for this visit. For me, since I'm a subspecialist, I get, you know, anywhere from half an hour to an hour. So I will tell them, after, you know, triage and working with the medical assistant, we've got about 45 minutes together today. Here's how we're going to spend the time. And then I do say, at some point, I am going to want to talk with you alone, and we're going to talk about sex, drugs, rock and roll. And I phrase it in that sort of lighthearted way so that parents know that, yes, this is an important part of the visit. Sometimes I'll get pushback, especially if it's a younger teen or even a preteen. But again, I reassure parents that this is really for the patient's safety, to be able to have somebody that they trust other than their parent that they can ask questions and talk to. And also that I'm going to do this in an age-appropriate manner. I'm not going to be providing information to their child, most likely that the child doesn't already have or isn't already inquiring about. And then I just also reassure parents that I do not do a physical exam without another nurse or a parent in the room, because that can be a real concern for parents too. So I just really try to provide reassurance that we're having a private conversation to empower their son, daughter, child, to be able to navigate the healthcare system more effectively, also to provide, you know, a responsible way to provide answers to questions that are more sensitive. And I will say, honestly, many parents are all too happy to have their child talk with somebody else about sex, especially, you know, a physician who is well rehearsed in this area. So I don't tend to get a lot of pushback. In some instances I have, and I was fortunate in one area when I worked in the Bronx to have medical assistants who worked with me, who lived and worked in the same community, and they were able to help bridge that sort of gap. If there wasn't, you know, if the parent did not have an established relationship with me as the physician, they were able to work with that parent to let them know, look, Dr. Titchin needs to be able to do this and have this private conversation so that your child can receive the best healthcare possible. And with that help from our staff, with our assistants, we're able to establish that relationship of trust even with the parent as well.
And teamwork goes a long way in this.
Yeah.
Oftentimes my medical assistant will have already informed me what the concerns are. So I'm walking into the room. I'm still open to, you know, new concerns and things that might pop up, but I already kind of know from that, because the medical assistant understands their parent is with them. Let me triage them really quickly and see what this youth's concerns are while I have them in private, so I can let Dr. Hill know.
Yeah, those little warnings or heads up moments are real gems, as I'm sure you guys feel too, just walking into the room, not feeling quite so lost as a physician.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And in talking about having those gems and these warning signs, you know, and shifting the conversation a little bit because of time, but, you know, what is sort of the current narrative around, you know, sex, gender, pregnancy, contraception, all of that? Like, what are you guys seeing? And what can any doctor who takes care of, you know, a young adult, a child, you know, what can we do to kind of better support our patients? Because there's a lot going on right now. But what do you guys think is the most important stuff?
I'm going to launch into that one. Just from what I have seen from medical school when I was, you know, in clerkships to now as a practicing physician, having been through residency and fellowship, and it's years later, I remember asking teens when I was in medical school, you know, the head's history, the psychosocial history, and asking them about boys, girls, both, who are you attracted to? And the answers years ago were almost defensively heterosexual. Now I more frequently get the answer of I'm not sure, or I think I'm pan. I think there's just way more widespread acceptance of the gender spectrum and an attraction spectrum, that people are not only one thing, and that's encouraging to me, because I see just generally much more acceptance. And I, you know, some of that may be regional, maybe geographic, but I've practiced in a variety of settings, inner city and some even slightly rural. So it does seem to translate, and it seems more of a generational thing. I don't know if, what do you want to add, Dr. Hill?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I'm usually reminded too, that some of the language that we use and the terminology, it's not shared widely. And so I run into young people that are almost adult age, or, you know, are adult age, that don't realize that they may be trans or non-binary because they never had that language, because they were growing up in a community where, you know, they had maybe gay, lesbian, bi, but they didn't have the gender terms. And so I'm seeing a lot of young people really come in and distress and concern, because they're realizing that they may have a different gender than what they are presumed to be, or who they are presumed to be. And they are completely almost relieved when you not only listen to them, but say, you know, yes, this is what this is. And you know, provide them with resources to go and learn more. And so I would say the youth today are very hungry. I would also still say that this idea and this misconception around, if you talk about sex, if you provide contraception, if you provide STI testing and HIV testing, and I actually care for young people living with HIV, in addition to other things, there's this idea and this narrative that still exists that is going to push these young people into different behaviors. And all I can continue to say is the data does not support that. The data does not support that. And the data does not support that. And so having these discussions, as Dr. Titchin mentioned very early in this discussion, is it super crucial, because you're providing them with the information to make more and more and better informed choices. And you will see, especially as a general pediatrician, you will see them and their brains start to click as they make healthier choices. Yes, they might have some bumps in the road, but, you know, when they get to the point where they're aging out of your clinic, you will actually be surprised having these open conversations. You'll be surprised at the young person that you have in front of you and how they're different from, you know, who they were when they were, you know, in elementary or middle school. And when you were really concerned, do I ask them about sex? So
I think we'd be remiss too if we didn't mention the effects of social media and the influence of social media on teens and young adults these days, and that you know, porn in particularly, it's being viewed quite commonly among teenagers. And so the information's out there, except it's not out there in the healthiest of ways. So we also have a, I think, a job as pediatricians and physicians to educate our youth so that they do understand, as, you know, coming full circle to what Dr. Hill was saying in the beginning, understanding healthy relationships and how to build those, understanding the difference between volitional sex and coercion. And really, it was telling to me when I did work in the Bronx and was educating in one high school that the first and most common question among high school boys at the time was, how do I not rape somebody? Which was shocking, because you would, you know, it was never something that I thought, why would you need to know how not to do that? Like, it just seemed, obvious to me, but really boys and girls both want information on how to build healthy relationships and how to conduct themselves in really responsible ways. They're at the point where they're making now adult decisions, and they want to feel empowered and they want to do the right thing. So I think it's up to us as adults, and especially those in the healthcare field, to guide them.
I have one more thing. I'm going to add it, because I know if I don't add it here, I'll forget. And this is something I say to all of my learners. All of us are sexual beings. And so I just want to make sure that we understand that people that may have unique abilities or different levels of cognition, they're also sexual beings too. And so, you know, please don't forget to talk to them about sex. And you may choose to do that with their provider, depending on, you know, what their abilities are, but you still want to make sure that you give them that moment to talk to them in private, and then talk with their parents together. And you may be the one that has to actually go through the boundaries talk with them. And there are resources out there, and I'm sure any of us on this discussion would actually be happy to point you in the right direction for resources on how to talk about puberty and sex for young people with different abilities. So I just want to put that out there.
Thank you. I think we've run out of time, I think. Thank you so much for this discussion. I think it's helpful. Just knowing in terms of, you know, like, you know, what we do matters, right? And that these children, our patients, like, that's part of our job, is to like step out of our comfort zone and engage with them in this conversation, just being open and curious this whole time.
I would even add, Dr. Wang, instead of this conversation, these conversations, because as you pointed out, you're not going to have time to do it in one setting, but you do have the benefit often of follow-up. So keep the conversation going.
Right.
Thanks for listening. If you like us, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.